something.
Morning. Welcome to the House Committee on Higher Education, Innovation, and Workforce Development. It's Wednesday, February 25th. We have a variety of things on our agenda today. We'll start with a work session on the possible introduction of committee measures. Representative Gallegos?
Yes, Chair Reed, I move the following legislative concepts be introduced as committee bills. LC-1883, dated 10-29-14. LC-2079, dated February 20th, 2015. LC-2569, dated February 24th, 2015.
Thank you. Representative Gallegos moves that LC-1883, dated 10-29-14, LC-2079, dated 2-2015, and LC-2569, dated 2-23-15, be introduced as committee bills, with the standard caveat that support of this motion does not connote any support of bills that might come back to us from these LCs. Is there any discussion on the motion? Any objections to the motion? Seeing none, the motion carries. Those three LCs will be introduced as committee bills. Close the work session on the introduction of committee measures and open public hearings concurrently on House Bill 2623 and House Bill 2624. While Victoria gives us a summary, perhaps Representative Reardon, Representative Johnson, you'd like to go around and get ready to introduce them as well. Victoria.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2623 directs the Department of Education to administer pilot program to increase students' exposure and access to career and technical education, sunsets pilot program on January 2, 2018, appropriates monies from general fund to Department of Education for purpose of pilot program, declares emergency, is effective on passage, and does have a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. House Bill 2624 directs the Oregon Education Investment Board and Department of Education to advance career and technical education opportunities by fulfilling specified requirements, appropriates monies from general fund to Department of Education for purpose of complying with requirements, declares emergency, is effective on passage, and also has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Thank you. Gentlemen.
Mr. Chair, esteemed panel and colleagues, so delighted to be here this morning. I've been looking forward to this moment. And when I drove in this morning, about 7
Representative
o'clock.
Representative Reardon, you've got to tell us who you are again.
Oh, I'm sorry. I always forget that part. Representative Jeff Reardon, District 48. Still excited to be here. But anyway, I drove in this morning about 7 o'clock, and I saw the bus unloading with these wonderful students out here in their red jackets. They were an hour early, which apparently is leadership time, as they explained to me. But it really reminded me of, you know, why we're here, why we're doing this, what we've gotten started over the last several years. So it just made me proud to be here and made me proud to be working with colleagues such as yourselves. We have started to rebuild a really long neglected CTE program, and that started before I got here. And I give Radovakian a lot of credit for getting the revitalizations grant program started two sessions ago. And then we added to that last session. But we need to do more. And I just throw out one example as, you know, I think we're in a competitive race with the state of Washington. And they're spending, according to my notes, about $384 million on CTE. We're just a little shy of that. So it's not just an economic issue or education issue. It's really all of this work I see as a strong economic reason. We need to be doing this to be competitive. We need to be doing this work to reduce our cost of social programs and so forth. I'll save the rest of it for floor speech someday. But as you're going to hear a little bit later from other testimony, there is a growing demand for a trained workforce. Not only are people aging out of the workforce, but hopefully our economy is also growing, and there will be a demand for trained, skilled workers in highly paid jobs. I'm going to talk about a couple of the bills, but I wanted to relay part of my experience. We're going to be talking about one of the bills. We'll talk about creating more teachers for these career programs. We've started, got the ball rolling with the programs and building up the shops and the other career programs, but we need teachers for those. And this became really clear to me. My last year teaching at David Douglas, left there in 2012, and that last year I was assigned to teach the metal shop. That was not really good. I'd had some metal shop experience, but I'm not a professional metal worker. I was doing woodworking, I've done business, marketing. Metals was not my thing. I survived the year, not too sure how the kids came out. So that's been, they're in their fourth year. They still don't have a qualified teacher for that position. And bless the folks that are in there filling that job. They're doing the best they can, but it's not somebody that has the technical skills to do it. I ran into a superintendent from Centennial, and actually I toured their school last fall. They were able to hire somebody out of industry, a man from Boeing, and that's how they've managed to fill their program. So that's, and it's something I heard about this in meeting after meeting, after meeting last year as I was learning more about CTE and the workforce needs. So that's part of it. House Bill 2624 is to try to fill that need for qualified teachers. And so it's basically let's get better information out on the TSP website, TSPC website, and so people can find out about the jobs, what the requirements are, and so forth. And then we need to start training teachers again. We haven't done that for over 20 years. So folks like myself are just not being trained, or probably people better than myself are not being trained. I'd like to see something where they can get their 18 hours. If you want to come from industry and get trained up, get that 18 hours, get it as quickly as possible, and have it really focused on what you need to do to be a successful career tech teacher if you've come from industry. So you've got the technical skills, but you need to know about classroom management, how to manage curriculum, budgeting, all these other things. So get them trained up so they have a chance of being successful in that classroom once they get there. The other one is I call it a course equivalency. I didn't make up the name. It's House Bill 2623. But the idea there is to address the problem that kids' schedules are very tight. They have to take all the core classes and a number of other requirements. So how do we make space in that schedule for the things they really want to take and where they want to learn about the careers? So this would allow career tech teachers to develop a program that where they could earn their core credit while taking a career-related class. And you think about it, if you've ever been in a wood shop or a metal shop, and you look at the kind of math they're using, for example, it's practical. And so that really appeals to a lot of the students, and so I think there's a really good fit there. It's being done. I saw it done at Benson High School. There was an example of they were co-teaching a program where you had the shop teacher, the construction teacher was helping teach them how to pound nails and saw and all that good stuff, and the math teacher was teaching the math, and they just traded off. So it can be done. I think we have a really great chance here to get better teachers, very well-qualified teachers, into the classroom, and also allow them to teach some of the core subjects as well. So that's all I have today, and thank you for listening.
Thank you, Representative. Let's hear from Representative Johnson, then we may have questions for you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. Great to see you. Mark Johnson, State Representative for House District 52. I live in Hood River. I want to thank the good representative for allowing me to piggyback on his efforts. He's been putting a lot of time and effort and sweat into this over the interim, and I think he's got the legislation here to a good place. But I think that, again, I mentioned to some of our audience here this morning that, you know, CTE and STEM sometimes is one of those shiny objects that everybody wants to touch, but they don't quite know what it does. They don't quite know what it's about. And it's time for Oregon to really, really start to finally get serious about doing something that's sustainable, tangible, and can lead to good outcomes. Because as Representative Reardon mentioned, you know, we are being embarrassed, I think, by our neighbors to the north and elsewhere with our level of investment, or actually lack of investment and just the lack of alignment that we have in efforts as well. I would say that there are some very good reasons why our per capita income in Oregon continues to lag our neighboring states, because I think CTE and particularly science-related education is something that Washington does far better than we do. And we've got to change that, because this is obviously a competitive marketplace, and it's family regarding workforce and industry location and stuff. Businesses go where they have a workforce that's trained and ready for them. We've got to do a better job, and it can begin through CTE education. So I just want to make two main points, and then I've actually got a little video here to show you, which I think will show you what CTE can mean, and it's a really, really great example. But I would just say two things we need to do. We've got to increase our investments. We know we need to do that. We're doing very, very poorly in that. But secondly, we've got to have better alignment of efforts. We need to have an alignment of efforts from K-12 through higher ed, involving encouraging and enlisting private sector support to make these efforts sustainable. But we also need our state agencies to be on the same page as well. We need everybody pulling from the same end of the rope towards the same common outcome, which is providing better opportunities, better career awareness, and then linking these students or these individuals with career pathways that lead into the private sector, into a good paying job. So I'm going to can we start this video over here? Can we do it up here? Or can you shoot this? I'll get a little background. Members who were here last session, you remember that we did some CTE revitalization grants. Our Hood River Valley High School received a $450,000 grant. So you're going to hear the teacher and some students tell you what that did for our career technical education at Hood River Valley High School.
Great. Thanks.
My name is Jeff Blackman, and I'm a teacher at Hood River Valley High School, and we just received the CTE revitalization grant from the Oregon Department of Education. So this grant is to bring the career technical education department up to the 21st century, improve our tooling, and allow students to be ready for the workforce.
Hi, my name is Victoria. We renovated our classroom to make room for new equipment provided for us from the money from the CTE grant. It was a really interesting process to watch, because our classroom wasn't very efficient beforehand, and now it really is, and it's a really great improvement.
So I'm Josh, I'm 18 years old, and I've been in HRV engineering for about 4 years now. We got a 3D printer from a grant, and it's a very powerful tool, a lot of rapid prototyping in it. It's gonna, even with the short amount of time I've been working with it, we have, you know, just taken huge strides in advancing our engineering process, and it's gonna be an incredible tool that kids next year will be able to use, and I'm incredibly jealous that they're going to be using it for.
My name is Martin. I'm an exchange student from Italy. We got a lot of cool stuff. We got a 3D printer, a laser cutter, and other cool things. And I used the 3D printer to print out a phone case with like my name on the back and Foot River and 2014 on it. That was pretty cool.
Hi, my name is Nils Engberson. This is my first year doing robotics, but my third year doing engineering type-related classes. With the grant, we were able to get a 180-watt 2D XY-axis laser cutter, which allows us to precisely cut materials such as plexiglass, plywood, and other such materials via a computer-guided pattern. The price tag on these things previously puts out of our budget, but with the grant we were able to afford this, and it's very helpful for making two-dimensional parts, which can be connected and interconnected to form three-dimensional parts, and it makes materials such as Lexan and plywood a lot easier to use and manufacture parts for the rest of the program with. Personally, I used it to make my robotics project, which is a laptop cooling stand. So here's actually a sample piece of one of the side sections printed off. What you do is you make the initial documents in SolidWorks, which you then turn into an Adobe Illustrator document, which, if formatted correctly, the laser cutter can interpret, engrave, and cut paths from that thing and make whatever you inscribed in Adobe Illustrator.
Hi, my name is William Lamer, and I recently participated in building quadcopters for the middle school STEM program, and it was really fun knowing that all the work we were doing was going to help out with the upcoming engineers into the high school. So we got these quadcopter kits and we built them up and made sure all the communication with the controllers worked and all wiring was great. Then we flew them around and we had quite a bit of fun, and then we sent them off to the middle schools.
Hi, my name is Peyton Urgert, and I came up with the idea to have a Hood River Engineering Fair downtown. I wanted the general public to know a little bit about what we're doing with the money with our shop classes and our engineering classes. We invited all of the Hood River Valley High School engineer students downtown to help work on projects and to present their projects to the general public. I'd like to thank our sponsors for helping us with this event, and also the Gorge Tech Alliance and everybody else that showed your support.
Well, it's pretty amazing to be able to see what can happen. And what you're talking about is really just putting really some modest resources, you know, $450,000 into the hands of obviously an instructor who's passionate about what he does. Jeff Blackman is absolutely off the charts, what he can do and his passion for robotics and working with kids. But that one grant, $450,000, as you saw, led to the purchase of some incredibly technical hardware that we wouldn't have been able to factor into our school district budget. But it also led to the quadcopter unit, where you had high school kids assembling these quadcopters, and then they took them down to our middle school kids, where we had a whole unit last spring on flight. Wow. And district-wide, or two middle schools, everybody had a chance to get in and learn about loft and pitch and all that kind of stuff, how things fly, how it's sustained. We in situ, our unmanned aerial vehicle manufacturer industry in the Gorge came in, and they brought in some engineers to actually help kids with this unit as well. So my point is, a fairly very modest investment led to a revitalization, and these are kids are just excited now. I will just tell you a couple of outcomes. Spring before last, we brought down Jeff Blackman's robotics class to present to the OEIB at the spring meeting, and they brought down some mock-ups of robots that they had made. And one student who is a Hispanic student, as his parents work in the orchards in River Valley, has designed a miniature orchard sprayer that's robotically controlled, because, you know, he sees his dad or his uncle or whatever every day get on the tractor, spray the fruit orchards and stuff, and he says, you know, what if we could design a machine that could do that, and my dad wouldn't have to do that? And they did it. And obviously, the thing can sense the height of trees. They can program in, you know, the coordinates of the thing can actually steer itself. All you'd have to do would be to put the spray in, and boom, away it goes. But that's the kind of innovation in getting these young minds to think about what can we do in our real lives to manufacture something to make our lives more productive and better. In that same class, too, there were four girls, none of which who had really ever thought about darkening the door of a science classroom before they entered Jeff Blackman's robotics class as sophomores and freshmen. Two of them were going on to full rides, Cal Poly San Luis Obispo, in engineering degrees. The other two were going to OSU with engineering degrees as well, full rides. But that's what can happen when you put some resources in front of kids, give them the opportunity to connect in a really passionate way, hands-on, and now these kids are going to have some great careers, and they're going to touch how many other lives during the course of their life. So that's why I'm excited about this. This is a good step. So I'd encourage your support of these measures and be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you.
Real quick comment. I forgot to acknowledge the tremendous help, and I can't name everybody that helped develop these bills, but just please know it was an involvement of folks from TSPC, Department of Ed, a wide array of business and education people, and I also want to mention the kids out in the hall. Please take time to talk to them today, and you will see examples from the other grants, so take a little time spending in the Galleria. And I think what Representative Johnson said so well, the examples he gave you, but my new criteria is look, if we're doing it right, look for the light in the kids' eyes. Mm-hmm. That's our real test. And you saw the light in this video, mm-hmm. in their eyes, the excitement. You know those kids are going to go on and do great things. And I feel so happy for the work that we're able to do together. So thank you very much.
Thanks. The video was very helpful. I hope, Representative Johnson, it seems like we should introduce the student you described to Ryan Jensen, the CEO of Honeycomb. Remember the company we heard about agricultural unmanned vehicles. Are there questions for the representatives? Representative Nierman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So either one of you, on the 2624, and I guess this is kind of an unfair question because what you're trying to do is fund a study, and I'm asking you for the conclusions on the study, but what, just off the cuff, what's some of your impressions are some of the impediments to finding teachers for career technical education? Is it money or is it people? I'm a welder. I don't want to deal with kids or what? I mean, just talk on that a little bit.
Well, part of it is information, and then you know, about what jobs might be available, what the requirements are. So that's pretty easy to address on a website. But if you're making that transition and you're making 70,000-80,000 a year in industry, which is not hard to do. I think part of our challenge, and it's going to have to be addressed at the school district level, is how do you get a reasonable starting wage for that person to make that transition? And some people, you know, frankly, like I think the guy out at Centennial, if I had to speak for him, he just wanted to do it, you know, and so he was willing to take that pay cut, and I don't know how he did it. So, but somehow, you know, maybe meet him part way. You can't expect somebody to go from 80,000 and start at 35 or 40. So that's a big part of it. And then it's the time taken. Right now, a high school principal can say, Joe Welder over here is good qualified, he can teach, and that person can basically come in and start teaching right away. I don't think that's a really good idea. And then that person would have 3 years to get their 18 credit hours. I would like to, hopefully, through this program, have it set up to where we can have a program where they can get their education that they need to really be well-prepared when they hit that classroom. It's a big transition from industry into the classroom. So we need to help them, and we need to make sure they get that education quickly and so they can get to work.
So. And Representative Nierman, one of the other roadblocks that typically pops up is just the licensure requirements. We have, Oregon has fairly strict requirements on what you have to do or what hoops you have to jump through in order to be able to get in front of kids. So as Representative Reardon says, you can have all the industry skills in the world, be incredibly world-class in your technical abilities, but then we make them have to go through some of these other hoops to be able to get in front of kids. So that's where I think within the bill, I think it shows, you know, it calls for better alignment between what we're trying to do on the educational side, the teaching side through the Oregon Department of Education, but TSPC also needs to get in line with those efforts too. So we're on the same page, trying to get the best qualified instructional talent in front of kids to create that inspiration that they need to have.
Follow up?
Yeah, I noticed that you said the dollar amount for 2623 is less than $500,000. What's the dollar amount for 2624 that you're asking for?
What we're suggesting is a grant program, have four grants of up to $250,000, and reason for that is the universities or colleges need some startup money to get their program started. That's all that is.
So a total of $1 million.
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
You actually took my question, the other one, to follow up on the question of what amounts would go into those blanks. Can you talk a bit about how these approaches fit with what we've, at least I've been hearing in more sort of vague terms from Boley and others that are working in the same sort of area? Are they all complementary? How do they fit together?
Absolutely, Chair Reed. These two bills are actually part of a series of probably half a dozen bills, and I just think it would be a very long meeting if I went into the whole stream of things. But we're trying to, you know, like I said, we started with the grants, and we've got building up the facilities. One of the other issues that came up is sustainable funding for this program. So if you look at the wonderful things these kids were doing in Hood River, You know, they're printing things on 3D. Their class sizes might be a little bit smaller. That costs more than your average poetry class. Okay. So how do we have sustainable funding at a little bit higher level? So I do have another bill that talks about increasing the weights for CTE classes. So that'll be an interesting discussion that we'll need to have. But how do we provide that little extra bump that they need to buy the materials for the printer? So,
Representative Gagos.
Thank you, Chair. I toured Hillsborough High School shop, and fascinating, and their tech shop, and I was interested though that the instructor had been there a long time, but actually I think he might have retired this year, but he also had taken it upon himself to raise a lot of the money to pay for a lot of that equipment. Do you see with these bills, do you see us also being able to do more partnering with some of the corporations and industries so that the state is not, you know, carrying the whole load, but can we look at other entities to...
Chair Reed, Representative Gagos, I absolutely see partnerships as an essential part of a program. For one thing, I mean, the most obvious thing is that's how the programs are going to keep current. And to have that immediate, you know, monthly, yearly feedback and a true partnership with business. If you are involved in any of the career technical student organizations that these young folks are involved with, that's part of it, is having a partnership. And they do fundraising as part of that as well. So, I mean, it's, you know, the entrepreneurial aspects are really something we don't talk about. We tend to focus on the technology, but leadership, entrepreneurship, those are all part of a well-run program. And the gentleman you're talking about, Don Domes, could not be here today. He's flying up from California. I think he'll be around this afternoon. But his partner in crime will be speaking later today.
Thank you.
So. Representative Gallegos, I would just say that the private sector is waiting with open arms for the public sector to get serious about making some investments and coming, allowing this process to go forward. We see that in our own area in Hood River. We have in the Gorge a group called the Gorge Technology Alliance. That is a consortium of all our tech companies from, we've got Google, as I mentioned earlier, and Situ, other spin-off companies and so forth that are there and they network together and so forth, but they have stepped up to sponsor robotics tournaments, provide quadcopter type component, all this type of stuff, as well as even giving their employees paid time off to come in and mentor kids in the classroom. So the private sector is there, and I think you're going to hear from Eric Maslow in a little bit about that as well. The private sector is anxiously awaiting us to get serious. But again, your point about the teacher in Hillsborough doing all he can do and practically having bake sales for CTE. You know, compare and contrast that with, as you said earlier, Washington to the North investing over $300 million in these programs, and therein lies part of the problem.
Other questions? Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
Here. And we have a number of people who have signed up to testify. Let's start with Joel Fisher, Kimberly Howard, and Eric Meslow, please. So as you're getting settled, please keep in mind we have both bills open for public hearing, so welcome your comments on either or both, and in whatever order you decide.
Chair Reed, Vice Chair Gallegos, Vice Chair Wisnett, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Joel Fisher with Oregon Business Association. I'll shorten a story that I think you've heard before. The Oregon Business Association teamed up with a business plan, OBC. We did this amazing tour around Oregon. We went everywhere in Oregon. We went to Portland. We went to all the rural areas. The number one issue that came up everywhere we went was workforce and connecting education to careers. And so there are a number of things that we can be doing to work on that. CTE is one of them. And CTE really is more than just shop class. A lot of people think it's just shop class. I went to Benson Polytechnic High School. I did photography. And one of the things that I recall from that was going to turn in a project that, you know, teacher said it's due at 10 a.m., don't be a second late, and he's up there and he's counting down 10, 9, and he's 3, 2, 1, and my project comes in just a half a second after he says 1, and I get marked down a full grade, and I was flabbergasted. I was frustrated, and he sat me down and explained to me that you were late. It wasn't on time, and we're trying to teach you the skills that you're going to need when you go out into the real world and get a job. And this is the same thing that we heard from business leaders around the state, business owners around the state. You know, people, it's the hard skills that people will learn in CTE classes, and it's the soft skills like showing up on time, not being on your phone and texting, and not being late. So these bills are just two of a number of things that we are working on. You know, we see this. We need more teachers are retiring, so there are two different ways that we can get them. You're convincing people to come over from industry. We need to train them up to learn how to teach. Or we have people who are already in the pipeline to become teachers, and we can train them up to work specifically on some of these CTE things. And then the course equivalency. If you've ever been around a CTE class, the applied, I mean, math is the thing that pops into my head first. The amount of applied math that happens in a typical class, you know, if you go into a metal fab shop, is mind-boggling, way above my head. And so with that, we'd urge your support for both of these bills and look forward to coming back and talking with you more about a whole lot of other ideas around CTE.
Thank you, sir.
Okay.
Howard.
Hello, Chair Reed and members of the committee. My name is Kimberly Howard. I lead education initiatives for Portland General Electric. I'm here today on behalf of our CEO, Jim Pyro, who is also the chair of the STEM Investment Council and the co-chair for the CTE STEM Employer Coalition. In addition to providing safe and reliable energy for our customers, PGE continues to be a corporate leader in working toward vibrant, economically strong communities through education initiatives that specifically focus on CT and STEM programs so that we can work toward these outcomes that we've been talking about. We really feel as an employer that it's imperative that we create a workforce that makes Oregon a competitive force for all of the companies that we serve as business customers. Currently, less than 2% of all Oregon graduates earn a STEM degree. That means that we're actually importing our talent. Am I too loud?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
It distorts when you're too close. I was debating whether or not to interrupt, but you're in good shape now.
Thank you. PGE has already started and has been working to target programs to specifically attract new talent. And for us, diversity is really key. We're looking for CTE students for our skilled labor programs. We're looking for STEM graduates for our engineering and non-technical engineering programs and positions, so women and people of color in particular. We believe that investing in Oregon students will help grow Oregon's economy. CTE and STEM education provide very clear pathways to students to opportunities that are both college and career tracks. And for many students, these are pathways out of poverty. They're leading to critical family wage jobs, and that's very important to us. We concur with some of the things we've already heard about having qualified, trained teachers. They're the same teachers. The CTE teachers and the STEM teachers are the same teachers. And it's along a continuum of learning that begins in kindergarten and goes all the way through higher education. And we also see that by providing those opportunities for students to have applied hands-on learning, that we're really engaging. Representative Johnson also spoke about the excitement. Representative Reardon talked about the light in the students' eyes. That engagement, we're actually seeing support the outcomes such as higher graduation rates, which we all know is a critical aspect of Oregon education at this time. The other thing about the continuum is for a lot of students, they don't actually realize the relevance of the work that they're doing in certain classes. And though that hands-on applied learning gives them something relevant that they can connect to real-world experiences, connecting education to their future careers. Finally, PGE, one of the questions that was asked is how is the private community investing in this work? PGE takes part in a lot of different types of CTE and STEM learning opportunities, from our partnership with the STEM hubs to our strategic outreach opportunities, like the most robust thing that's happening this month is our National Engineers Month through Business Education Compact, and we have about 44 engineers that are in classrooms this month directly working with students. We're sending those subject matter experts so, again, they can see the connection between the work that they're doing and the future career possibilities. Thank you.
Thanks, Ms. Howard. Mr. Meslow.
Good morning, Chair Reed, Representative Gallegos, Representative Wisnet, members of the committee. My name is Eric Meslow. I'm the president and CEO of a manufacturing, high-tech manufacturing company in Tualatin, Oregon. Normally, I would be here talking about STEM issues only to this council or this committee, but today I thought it was very important that I come and talk about CTE. Specifically, I don't like silos. I've been working STEM issues because that's the silo I was placed in. That was the silo that I was tasked with and making progress with. But the fact is that I changed all my testimony when Rep. Johnson played the video. And I'll just cut to the point. What Rep. Johnson said, what my two colleagues said from a policy side and from an economic side, I can't add anything to it. What I can add as a business owner is when I saw that video, I have the same laser cutter. I have one of the same types of 3D printers in my building. I have the same types of CNC machines that I see in shop after shop after shop. Today's shop classes are not the shop classes we grew up with in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. Today, they look completely different, and they look like business is what my point would be. Ultimately, I hire a significant number of engineers. I hire a significant number of four-year graduates and post and graduate degreed employees. But the very hardest employees for me to find and hire are two-year associate degreed technicians, machinists, welders, the people that actually do the work. Those are the actual hardest people for me to find. And I think we have the largest shortfall, frankly, in the state of Oregon from pipeline issues all the way through post-secondary in that regard. So I fully support all activities around CTE. I think, again, it's about connecting careers to education to careers. And we've got to stop talking necessarily as much about the labels. Certainly the labels are important when it gets to where the money can go and move around. But the problem itself is about getting making opportunities for kids, for the next generation, good-paying jobs, and frankly, I think it's the state has been negligent over the last 20 years in regards to the funding levels they've and the frankly the disfunding that they've been doing in the CTE realm, and it's critical for this economy to get back into it. From a policy standpoint, if I want to put my policy hat back on. The economics are really straightforward. I mean, the benefit cost-benefit ratio of a CTE or a STEM graduate, what kind of taxes they return to the state for the investment the state makes is a no-brainer. I mean, we're talking margins of 6, 7, 8 to 1 in regards to the investment the state makes in those types of careers. But CTE and STEM type graduates do cost about twice as much to produce as a liberal arts degree or a liberal arts education. So there needs to be that upfront investment by the state. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? Representative Hayden.
Thank you, Chair. A two-part question. I'll ask it all at once here. With the difficulty in finding the appropriate teacher, either from industry and the complications with that or bringing the teacher up through the pipeline, is there a proposed balance to that versus sliding more towards retooling the teacher skills to be able to do it, somebody that was originally gone through program to be in education versus industry? And then a question on top of that for industry, is there adequate or any tax credits or benefits that your companies have been able to identify to help the concept of the teachers coming from industry for these programs with paid time off from their companies and then the companies incentivized by some sort of tax credit? Is that out there available to you to help that process?
I can take the first question and just say I think that there are, we're working with people at the Department of Education that I think can better answer that question. And Representative Reardon certainly has been doing a lot of work on that.
Representative Hayden, Chair Reed, kind of go in regards to teachers and the supply of teachers. The state of Oregon has no shortage of supply of history teachers and English teachers and math teachers for the most part, maybe math a little bit more, but history and English teachers. And the reason being is that it's ingrained in the culture of the supply side on teachers. The universities all have programs very specifically set aside to produce those degrees and to meet the demand. There is not that type of support within the university system for CTE teachers. So I think part of this is rebooting that system that, frankly, was dismantled. As the state dismantled CTE programs, the universities rightfully so dismantled their CTE education as well for teachers. So that supply side on teachers is reversible, but it's going to take an initial investment to do so. I speak to this a little bit. I have a secondary teaching degree from Oregon State University. And at that time that I went through in the 80s, OSU had a program to support CTE education. They don't have that, I don't believe, at this time anymore. It needs to be solved. In regards to what you can perhaps do or what programs are available to engage industry in this process, and I think this is a critical piece, state needs to take point. I will always say this, that education needs to be the leader in this regard. Industry is more than willing to follow, but for industry to act as a leadership position, to reach in as opposed to being reached out and pulled in, takes a lot more energy for a company to do when a company's primary responsibility is to make money and to provide jobs. So it's a balance. I think there are a lot of really interesting programs through the STEM hubs. There are websites and others that connect industry into schools, and there are barriers there that need to be broken down in regards to the credentialing and the ability for that to happen. But ultimately, it's there. It just needs to be encouraged.
Questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate you being here. We also have Terrell Smith and Mark Clifford. I was debating whether it was Terrell or Terrell. I hope I got it right.
I'll respond to both.
Okay. Would you like to get us started, sir?
So my name is Terrell Smith, Chairman Reed and committee. My name is Terrell Smith. I'm a longtime teacher in Sherwood High School, and I was introduced earlier as the partner in crime. So if my crime is driving CTE initiatives hard, I hope there's enough evidence to convict me of that. But I do teach computer science at Sherwood High School, and I have since 1983. I am... you know, we talk about teachers retiring and who's going to backfill, and I want to address that issue. I'm also one of the leaders of the Oregon Computer Science Teachers Association, and I'm currently a full-time teacher. My students hopefully are fully academically engaged at this point, period one, and I could probably check in on them here in a few minutes to find out for sure. But As has been indicated, and I'll give you a couple of facts here, that 109,000 new STEM jobs will be available in Oregon in the next 5 years. 71% of those jobs will require high-tech type of education. And currently only 1 in 7 schools, high schools in Oregon, offer those courses. And so, kind of add to what we had heard earlier, that's a serious need, a serious challenge for our workforce, for our education system, and for our students. It's our social calling as adults to provide opportunities that are out there, and currently we are not. The Oregon Computer Science Teachers Association did a study because we were curious about the status of the high-tech engineering, computer science, and CTE programs in Sherwood, and focused on computer science just as one of the main issues here. But of the 341 Oregon diploma-granting high schools in Oregon, 127 of those schools don't even offer any computer courses. 287 of them do not offer high-tech courses such as computer science. Only 49 of those schools of the 341 offer at least one computer science course. And that's 1 in 6, 1 in 7 schools. And with the demand in the job market out there, this is essentially a sad situation. What I tell my students is that and I'm preaching to the choir, so you're in a great position to get jobs when you get out of high school and get out of college. Now, as Eric Maslow just indicated, he's having trouble finding students who are 2 years out of high school to hire, and hopefully, and my students are there, but I'm a unique program in that regard. The other numbers that might be of interest, there, in the regards to unemployment, there are three jobs for every qualified applicant, or excuse me, three applicants for every qualified job in the broad employment sector. In the high tech sector, there are three jobs for every qualified applicant. And so the reverse, I don't know if we have an unemployment problem in Oregon, but we do have a skills problem. Some other issues in Chicago, for example, Chicago students are required to take a high-tech computer science type course for graduation. In Sherwood High School, and Mark Clifford was a teacher colleague of mine a few years back, and at that point in time, and still, we require two high-tech computer classes to graduate. That's very unique. We may be the only high school in Oregon that does that. So I'm here to address those issues regarding Senate Bill 2623, which says creates pilot programs for the idea of doing some creating application courses, say, in math and science that are offered through CTE high-tech courses that will give administrators incentives to add those programs or sustain those programs. Senate Bill 2624 then addresses the issue that's close to my heart, and as indicated, Don Domes is retired from Hillsborough High School. So that was mentioned, and Don Domes would be here this morning and testifying along with us. We work together. That's why the partner in crime idea is we need to backfill for us. Retired, longtime teachers are going to be moving on, going to be retiring. And as well, there's so much STEM and CTE pressure in Oregon, there's going to be a lot of new programs added to our schools. Our administrators want to do it. And these bills that you folks are considering will provide those opportunities. So where are those teachers going to come from? Those teachers, some will come from industry, as indicated. We won't get into the details there. Some should come from higher ed, but the specifics on what was mentioned earlier, Oregon State dropped that program in 1991. There currently are no programs graduating CTE-trained, in particularly computer science and high-tech-trained teachers in Oregon. And secondly, as you might imagine, I'm a true believer in the art of teaching. So I think it is possible. And a very significant supply issue is to take teachers in math and science that are currently teaching and tap on their shoulder and train them and give them those skills, because that's where the force is. The force of the teaching, the art of teaching and teaching force are in the schools and needs to be identified. And Senate Bill 2624 does that. An example might be that a university would say, tap on the pre-service teachers of math and science and say, Would you be interested in taking 18 more credits, as Representative Reardon indicated earlier, to get that endorsement or that specialization or the then that would give you a lot of opportunities because the jobs are there. I think I'm going to just give a couple comments that Don Domes wanted me to indicate. Issues regarding Washington County. There are 70,000 students will graduate out of Washington County in the next 10 years. Over that period of time, there's 35,000 jobs available in the industrial pathway. Half of those students could get those jobs, but their students are not being trained in those areas. Kimberly Howard indicated earlier regarding relevance, CTE programs are relevant. CTE courses are relevant. Kids understand why they're learning these skills and this information. And I will suggest that if we create a lot of these programs in our schools, our dropout rate will go down. Kids will get up in the morning wanting to go to school. And that's why I've been in this business for 36 years, is to create opportunities and reasons for kids to get up and be excited about learning. So CTE, and we have some T-shirts out there for any of you who want to pick one up, that says Career and Technical Education, CTE, learning that works.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. Mr. Clifford.
Chairman Reed and members of the committee, my name is Mark Clifford, and I'm the director of the ACE Academy in East Multnomah County. If you don't know, ACE Academy is the Academy for Architecture, Construction, and Engineering. We're a two-year school partnering with Centennial, Gresham, Barlow, Reynolds, and the Park Row School Districts to provide pathway instruction within the architecture, construction, and engineering fields. Students spend a half day at my school, then a half day at their home school. And in a sense, we're a regional tech center because we provide that. What we are able to do is leverage dollars by centralizing what we do in one building serving four districts. So I was listening to Eric talk, and he threw his notes out and went off the cuff, so to speak. And I've heard Eric talk many times. And so we have two bills, 23 and 24. And 23, basically, from what I heard Representative Reardon say, removes barriers to students. And how it removes the barriers is it eliminates their need to make a choice between this and that. And what happens is, and it's a very real problem, that students do have to make a choice, and they don't choose to take the CTE pathway because of the heavy pressure they have to take core classes. And as you may know, high school schedules have become compressed because of all the requirements students have to meet. So there's value in finding ways to double up, so to speak, the credit students can earn. And as we know, STEM classes do utilize mathematics throughout. And so I have an engineering program that it's a Project Lead the Way curriculum for 2 years, integrated math. I have an architecture program, Project Lead the Way integrated for 2 years, so it's got math. So there are ways to get that math credit in the context of what we're already doing. But what I really think I bring to the table and listening to some of the questions of the panel is because I'm a charter school, I don't have the same requirements for hiring my staff that a regular public high school would have. And so I have an architecture teacher who is an architect. And he practices his architecture one day a week on the weekends, and 4 days a week he's in my school teaching students architecture. And you should come out and visit that classroom, because I would tell you it's probably the best architecture program in the state. And perhaps I would go nationally. It's an amazing program. But it's the reason it's amazing is because I have an architect teaching that class. I made a change in my construction program this last year and brought in a new teacher. And the teacher I have is a construction worker, and it's a woman. And because I want to increase the number of women in the trades, I hired a woman to do that. But also, she has tremendous connections with the trades themselves. And because I hired her, I now have the electricians come in once a week, the roofers come in, carpenters, were in the Carpenters Institute, so they're there all the time. So the trades come in and work with my students, and what we're really doing is we're creating pathways. And the way we're creating the pathways is we have these professionals from the field who are actually interacting with students and giving them a, what you'd call a professional experience that you just can't get from a teacher who's been converted from auto to wood shop or wood shop to metals. You're getting professionals who come in and have credibility in their field, connections in their field, and can deliver a product that you just can't get otherwise, especially with the erosion of the programs at the state level, the university systems. The other side of this is we talked about partnerships and bringing money in from the private sector to support what we're doing in the classroom. And because I have professionals who already have credibility with the private sector, and because we're starting to deliver on the promise of ACE, they want to step in and help us out. We've been approached, and I don't want to get into too many details because it's still in the sort of the early stages, but the trades have approached us with a specific plan to help us both instructionally and economically, because we had two students apply for the trades at the end of last year. We have 15 applying for the trades at the end of this year. And that's because of this person coming in from the private sector and supporting the program with her experience and her connections in the private sector. The AGC has been a longtime partner with us, and they're seeing some return on their original investment now because of what we're able to do, again, because of what I'm able to do with my staff. So while I have different rules in the state, the public high schools have, it's a, if you will, it's a lab to see how what the effect of such things could be if you were to pass 24 and change some of the requirements for staffing public high school CTE programs. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there questions for either of these gentlemen? Done a good job of adding to the importance of these bills. We appreciate it, and we're glad you're here. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That completes the list of people who have signed up to testify on House Bill 2623 and 2624. Is there anyone else here who would like to testify on either of those bills? Don't see any. Representative Reardon, Representative Johnson, any last comments before we close the public hearing for today?
Who could top these presenters? They add so much value to this conversation, we just need to be smart enough to listen to them.
Thank you. Representative Johnson, thank you very much. So we close the public hearing on House Bill 2623 and House Bill 2624, and open an informational meeting on PCC's Future Connect program. It's worth a little explanation as to why we're doing this informational hearing. We have a bill on this topic, but it's not here yet, and we will be opening that up as a public hearing, not too far in the distant future, but we need to do it as an informational hearing to start. So I want to, President Brown is already there, as is Steve Calloway, and now we have Randy Ely, and this is running itself. I'll just sit back. Representative Gagos, you wanted to give us a little setup, though, I think?
Yeah, and so I don't know if I'm testifying, so just in case, Joe Gallegos, House District 30. Chair Reed, members of the committee, want to thank you for this opportunity, and I'm really going to let the experts out here talk to you about this bill, but House Bill 3063 seeks to continue strategic investment in higher education, workforce development, the Aspirations to College Bill. And for those of you who weren't here last time, we passed this bill last session, and it continues to be an exceedingly successful program. So the program itself, these funds will be allocated through $3 million to the college, Community College Work Development Fund for the 2015-17 biennium to fund a competitive grant program available to community colleges throughout the state. These grant dollars are targeted to programs providing access and support to students from low-income backgrounds, or who are their first in their families to go to college. The goal is to leverage our state investment by participating, by partnering with local business communities, the philanthropic communities, our local governments to provide these students with a chance to go to college, not only to go to college, but to be supported with tools that they need to succeed and thrive. So you see where my question earlier came from in terms of, really, I think it's partnering that we need to really seek in terms of being successful in reaching our 40-40-20. I do want to just final comment, just to mention, again, we did fund last year the program, and I just wanted to report on some of the success of that program. The Future Connect program, which is the name of the program in the Portland, Hillsborough, and Beaverton collaboration. They're reporting success rates. Let's see, Portland has an 80% success rate, Hillsborough 84%, and Beaverton is boasting a 96%. So we'll let the mayors sort of come here sometime and sort of defend their numbers. But I think those are great numbers when you think about what that means in terms of first-generation, low-income young people getting to college who probably wouldn't have gotten there in the first place. So thank you very much, and we can hear from the panel.
Thanks, Representative Gagos. And again, we're talking in general terms about a bill that we haven't yet received in a way that we can have the public hearing. So we'll continue that later on when we have it, but we're interested in your introduction. I imagine, President Brown, you're going to start us off?
Yes, I am. Thank you very much. Chair Reed, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Dr. Jeremy Brown. I'm the president of Portland Community College, and an honor to be here today to update you on the Future Connect program, a program that you helped to support starting last year with the passage of House Bill 4116. Today you'll hear from Hamla Blumenthal, the director of the Links program at PCC, and Joshua Laurie, the program manager for the Future Connect program, who will both give you an overview of what the Future Connect program is and why it is so exceedingly successful. As well as also hearing from Tobias Sherwood, one of our Future Connect coaches at PCC Southeast Campus, who'll speak directly to the work that he does every day with students. I'm also pleased that Hillsborough City Council Chair Steve Calloway and Randy Ely, the Chief Administrative Officer for the City of Beaverton, as well as Beaverton City Council Member Lacey Beattie, are here to share their experiences partnering with PCC to bring Future Connect into their communities. We also have in the audience Michael Brown, the City Manager from Hillsborough, to also add support. Most importantly, and no pressure, but hearing from students is probably the most powerful statement that we can make. And we're delighted that we have Gabby Gonzalez Gomez, a 2012 Jefferson High School graduate and Future Connect scholar, who will share her story. I'd also like to thank Representatives Reed, Reardon, and Williamson for sponsoring, and Representative Gallegos for chief sponsoring House Bill 4116 in the last session, and all of the other committee members who voted for the bill that has allowed us to offer this highly successful program to many more students and in many ways changing their lives. Thank you, Chair Reed, for the opportunity to present in front of your committee. I'd like to start by turning this over to Randy Ely to talk about the City of Beaverton's involvement in this program.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Ely, welcome.
Thank you, Chairman Reed, members of the committee. Good morning. I see a lot of familiar faces. I wanted to start about...
And I'm sorry to interrupt. We need you to state your name for our records, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Randy Ely. I am the Chief Administrative Officer for the City of Beaverton.
Thanks.
And with me is City Councilor Lacey Beattie. I'm going to ask her to say a few words after I'm done about her support for this program. Imagine, if you will, you're me a couple years ago, and Dr. Brown comes and asks you to help send young men and women to college. A little bit out of a city or municipality's comfort zone. We receive $35 million in property taxes. Virtually every penny goes to public safety. So resources are scarce. But what a great looking back decision that was to go to my city council and ask for their support of this program. For 2 years, we have funded a cohort of 50 young men and women, first-generation students, low income, to go to Portland Community College. That's a $100,000 investment each year on the City of Beaverton's behalf. 96%, I'm here to tell you, retention rate, pretty phenomenal. Young men and women come to our city council and testify, and it's hard to hold back the tears when you hear it. In one example, last February, a young man testified in front of our council that after wrapping up his experience with the program, he is now moving on to Portland State with a degree, and he otherwise would have been a high school dropout. So we feel very passionate about our partnership with this program. We will continue to ask as administration for council and budget committee support, and wanted to thank you today for your support in stretching and supporting Dr. Brown's vision and Portland Community College effort here. That's really all I have to say. Lacey, if I could, for 1 second, offer her the floor.
We'll give her more than 1 second.
Sure.
Chairman Reed, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Lacey Beattie. I'm a city councilor in Beaverton. When my city manager asked me to come down today, I jumped on it. My husband and I are both first-generation college graduates. We are both community college graduates. While our path was different, we went to school in the Montgomery GI Bill. I think community college has a very relevant piece in our community. And as a city councilor, we're constantly asked on how we're going to spend our money, how we're going to budget. Just like you guys, we have people in front of us all the time asking, but how could you say no to a 96% retention rate? What an amazing return on investment the city's been able to partner with Portland Community College. So I just wanted to come down today and tell you guys, we're ready to go forward a partnership in another year. We can't say no. They're amazing. But you don't want to hear from us, so we'll be quick so you could hear from the students, because they're the reason why we're here.
Thank you very much. I appreciate being here. Sir.
Good morning. Thank you very much, Chair Reed and members of the committee, for the opportunity to speak to you today about the Future Connect program and the strong support that the city of Hillsborough has for this remarkable program. Hillsborough is engaged
and
supported.
And I need to interrupt you again if you could introduce yourself, too.
Absolutely. You know, I thought I skipped that. My name is Steve Calloway, and I'm the president of the Hillsborough City Council. The city of Hillsborough is engaged and supportive of this partnership because it's a mutual goal to provide opportunities to youth, and especially youth that face barriers such as low-income and first-generation students. These barriers can be replaced by opportunities such as those afforded by Future Connect. In December 2014, the City of Hillsborough approved a third investment of $100,000 in PCC's Future Connect program to fund partial scholarships for an additional 50 Hillsborough students to attend classes at PCC. It's an ongoing and continued commitment to helping at-risk and low-income first-generation students, and it builds upon our previous $200,000 investment during the 13-14 and 14-15 fiscal years. As a city, we have expanded our support and our program to include summer employment opportunities, and this year, last summer, offered 5 summer internships to PCC Future Connect students. Those 5 students spent 20 hours a week working in various fields within the city, from GIS mapping to arts-based summer camps. They worked with the fire department in community outreach and fire prevention. They assisted at the senior center with the nutrition program, and they had amazing experiences and gained valuable experience in the field of public service. In addition to being on the Hillsborough City Council, I'm also an elementary school principal in the Hillsborough School District. And 2 years ago, when I spoke to the first Future Connect cohort, that included Hillsborough students, I was thrilled to see 2 of my former elementary students in the group. It turned out one was a part of the group and the other was high on the wait list. Good fortune came and both were included. I've been able to keep up with them over the last couple of years as they continue to go to school, and they're doing great. They're studying hard and working hard. One is working at a Sherwin-Williams paint store and the other is working at a bank. But they have shared with me that none of their PCC experiences would be possible from those earnings alone. Now, each of us today in this room can look at our own lives and our status and our level of education and the roles that we hold and fill, and we can identify specific opportunities that we were given to experience something, to travel somewhere, to participate in something, or try something out. And we can also identify a specific support that we received, whether it was economic, a mentor, coach, instructor. It might have been words of encouragement or consistent emotional support and affirmation. And this is what Future Connect provides. It provides opportunity and supports for students, and in the process changes lives, changes futures, and changes trajectories. Our state has an ambitious 40-40-20 plan. Future Connect supports this. We tell students, especially as educators, to work hard, study, go to school, get good grades, and you can go to college. Future Connect changes this from rhetoric to reality. So please support the expansion of this program and the expansion of opportunities and support for our students. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Calloway. Questions for this group? Thank you very much. We appreciate you being here. As President Brown mentioned, we'll hear from a few other people. Pamela Blumenthal and Joshua Laurie, please.
Hello.
Good morning.
Representative Reed, members of the committee, thank you so much for having us today. It's lovely to be back and in front of all of you. For the record, my name is Pam Blumenthal. I'm the director of Links Programs at Portland Community College. Josh and I are going to provide some information, kind of program information and some other information about our funding and our outcomes. And we are very excited about what's happening with our program and how the support that from last year's House bill has allowed us to expand and enhance what we do, and we look forward to sharing that with you. Josh is going to give an overview of the program. Some of you may be new to how this program works, and we want to give a little more detail.
Great, thanks.
Good morning, Chairperson Representative Reed,
And members of the committee, for the record, my name is Joshua Laurie, and I'm the program manager of the Future Connect Scholarship Program. I've been with the program since 2011 when it started, and I'm going to try and walk you through what a typical student might see in the pathway through Future Connect from high school, from the K-12 system to college and beyond. My job is really to monitor and...
You can move that microphone over so you don't have to...
I always tell the students, don't talk right into it because it's going
to
be too loud.
No, that's good. You don't have to get right next to it. It'll distort, but you also don't have to cover as much.
Get a kink in my neck. All right. So 4 years ago when we began this initiative, we really started with the basic idea of scholarship funding and support. What we didn't realize is that the program today really has about six key facets to it. As I start this PowerPoint, I want to share that all the students in here are part of a campaign to raise awareness, not just about Future Connect, but also about college access. So every single student in these pictures was a part of our campaign that we did last year to connect our students to their former high schools. And the beauty of that is it's just one unseen piece where high school, college, and career counselors were then connecting to us and recognizing their former graduates and saying, oh, it's so great to see so-and-so and so-and-so and so-and-so graduating and doing well there. So as we go through this and you see all these pictures, these are actual students who are part of our campaign to raise awareness. So the first part of Future Connect is really the high school connection and our outreach. Currently, we are working in over 50 schools, and we've presented to over 2,000 students this year alone. Our college counselors, our college coaches, our recruitment specialists are out in the high schools raising awareness about how to access financial aid, when scholarships are available, and when the application process begins. This is a key point for us because we want to connect to the students prior to them leaving the K-12 system. The next piece that every student experiences is the summer workshop. So not much unlike what someone might go to as a four-year university or a private school where they ask the students to come out on campus before they start in fall, we do the same thing in Future Connect. We have eight separate summer workshops, and they're all regionally based. So all the students are expected to attend one of these full-day workshops with other individuals who are graduates from their area. And so what you see in those workshops are about 65, 70 students or so with our coaches talking about the college transition and the cultural transition that they're about to experience 3 months prior to them stepping foot on campus in fall. The next key aspect of Future Connect is the cohort-style classes. Every Future Connect scholarship recipient starts a college survival class in fall and then takes a Today's Careers class in CG 130 in winter. And so the idea is that they're once again taking these locked cohort classes in fall and then transition in winter as a group. So not only have we connected to them in the high school, we've built a bridge over summer, and now we're making sure that their first and second term at college is supported with their coach. And Tobias Sherwood is here today to speak on behalf of what the coach does, but I can tell you that the coach is really the glue of the program. The coach is integral in all of these facets. So the coach is the one who also meets with the student in high school, participates in the summer workshop, teaches the college classes, but also advises and supports the student. I couldn't speak highly enough about the coaches that we have on staff and the work that they do. Scholarship dollars. The program is a scholarship program, and I find it's interesting that we don't mention the scholarship dollars until maybe the fifth piece here. And so often when we go out into high schools, students really want to hear about the scholarship dollars. How can I get scholarship money? But once we begin working with them and we survey them after their first year, what we find out is the scholarship dollars are actually, they're important, but they're not the key facet of the program that helps them stay supported and retained. It's one piece, but it's just one piece of the puzzle of support. And finally, a piece that we've really developed over the last 2 years are leadership components and our transitional opportunities. We've helped develop 43 scholarships to four-year universities in the last 2 years, two specific schools that have come on board because they really want our graduates. Our Lewis and Clark College is providing five full-ride scholarships for our students who have transfer degrees, and Pacific just came on board 2 months ago to provide three full-ride scholarships for our students. So the idea is that students who are going through our program are able to apply for these scholarships. We work in concert with those universities, and we tell students when they enter our program that these are available for them. So it's not just about accessing college, but it's about thinking about the next step after community college. Finally, a big piece of this is connecting our students to their community. So the leadership opportunities that we've developed, we have a third class where we identify leaders in our program, first and second year community college students, and we train them in their spring term, and then they're able to access work study funds and go back into their middle schools that they previously came from or their high schools. This has gained a lot of recognition, so much so that Portland Public School District has collaborated with us over the last summer on a national Gear Up grant. So now we're providing 50 paid work study positions to Portland Public Feeder Schools in the Jefferson, Madison, Roosevelt cluster for our students who have completed a first year, if you can imagine this, going back into their middle schools and they're working as tutors or mentors this next fall. And so we're really trying to broaden the scope of breaking down the barriers between the K-12 system and the college system. And what we've realized as coaches and administrators is that it's one thing for us to do that, but it's a whole other thing when our students are able to do that in a way that makes sense for them and their community. Those six pieces are really the Future Connect program. It's labor intensive. It's not just scholarship. It's quite a bit of support, and so I feel lucky to work with the students, and Tobias and Gabby will speak to their experience with the program, and I think Pam will speak to some of the funding resources.
Right, so the return...
Interrupt for just a second. Oh, we have a question. Representative Wisdom.
Thank you. Thank you for that information. Great program. I was here last session. We got briefed on this. The pre-SAT, we funded that for 10th graders, isn't it, or... so that they could see how they could do. You know, a lot of students don't think they're college material. Do you use that testing at all? Are you your people looking at how they do in the...
The PSAT, is that what you're talking about? Most of our students do not take the PSAT. Most of them aren't thinking that they're going to go to college at that time.
Mr. Chair.
Yeah.
But that was the purpose in us funding it, is so that those kids could see, maybe I do have a chance to... So you're not giving the test at all. I thought we're still funding.
Those are given at high school.
Yes, it goes through the high school. So we're talking to the community college folks here.
Okay.
But I don't want to put words in your mouth.
I thought we'd started looking. You're going back and reaching in the high school.
We work with the high schools, okay. And I don't know at what rate or who they're giving the PSAT to. I'm sure maybe some of our students, but in general, Josh, I would say most
Chair
of them.
Yeah, Chair Reed, Vice Chair Representative Wisnett, we do work with the college and career transition specialists at each high school, and some of those individuals have access to the PSAT and SAT, but quite frankly, most of the students that we're working with in our program are pre-contemplative about college until about January of their senior year. So they don't think that they're going to college, whereas the PSAT and SAT may happen in their 10th grade year.
Thank you. And again, I'm not being argumentative.
No, right? Because
when we passed that and we said that, some of the students didn't think they were college material, but if you identify them in the 10th grade, then they can start working on their course material to be eligible. So I would think you might want to continue your high school relationship and ask them, are you looking at those kids and getting them in this path?
Absolutely, Vice Chair Representative. I mean, what we're trying to do right now is really work down the pipeline. So we're getting our students to get access to the students earlier in the K-12 system. I mean, in our last 4 years, we initially started senior year. Now that we have relationships with many of the high schools and community-based organizations, we're out there and we're presenting to juniors, sophomores, and now with the Gear Up grant, we're going to be presenting, our students are going to be presenting and working with students and being advocates for college in 7th and 8th grade.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay, thanks. I just wanted to tell you a little bit about the funding model. And as you heard, the return on investment here, we knew early on that the return on investment would be great, but we had no idea that there'd be a strong return on investment with just within a year with having our students go back into their high schools and provide such a service and into middle schools. The support services that we're talking about here are provided through a unique shared funding model that matches local city economic development resources with private philanthropic resources from our PCC Foundation. This includes corporate donations, foundation grants, and individual donors. Last year, with House Bill 4116, we were able to receive resources from CCWD to deepen and expand our work and create a greater impact. We thank you for this support. This strategic initiative has also had statewide impact, with an additional 12 community colleges receiving resources through the House Bill to create and enhance programs for low-income, first-generation, and underrepresented students. Others locally and regionally, as well as nationally, are noticing Future Connect and are interested in how we are leveraging local, state, and private resources. I've been able to present about Future Connect at both local and national conferences, and the word is definitely out about the engagement and outcomes that we are achieving. The attention through this work and through the House bill encouraged the Ford Family Foundation to become interested in our model. Last year, we received a planning grant to explore how the Future Connect model could work in rural communities where there is the need is great, but the resources are limited. We have begun this project in Columbia County, and we are currently gathering information, engaging stakeholders, and exploring funding strategies in our rural communities. And that's all I have for today.
Thank you very much.
Any questions for Representative Gallegos?
Thank you very much. It's like I said, it's a great program. I had a question about, and I always have to look this up, about DACA students, about deferred action for childhood arrivals. I know that one of the barriers is the FAFSA, and I know that part of our program is to help students get through FAFSA, which is half of getting through college, frankly. But do you... is there any thought given to these DACA students at all?
Yeah, we're actually able to serve DACA students in our program. What we do is we have a family component that's part of the Summer Bridge component, and what we find is that the family members of DACA students don't realize the inexpensive tuition that we're able to provide at PCC. So oftentimes there's a misnomer, if you will, that college is unaffordable. And then when we start to meet with individual family members who aren't able to access financial aid, they realize that they can save up and put together funds for college. And then we provide the supports for those students.
Great. Thank you. Questions?
Let's see. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Last up, Tobias Sherwood and Gabby Gonzalez Gomez, please.
Good morning, Chairperson Reed and members of the committee. My name is Tobias Sherwood. I'm a college success coach with the Future Connect scholarship program. So every day of the week, I'm working with students like Gabby, who we'll hear from in a few minutes. I wanted to give you a little glimpse into my job, what it looks like on a day-to-day basis. This week happens to be registration week for spring term at PCC, and so for the last 3 weeks, I've been meeting with students to help them plan their spring terms, what classes they'll be taking, looking ahead to next school year as they make progress toward their degrees. But mixed in with all of these meetings, which have been numerous, it's almost like a vacation coming down here to Salem today.
We're happy to provide vacation
thank you.
For you.
We thank
feel
you.
The same.
Glad
you,
Chairman
yeah,
Reed, I appreciate
see how
that.
The group feels here.
I'm also instructing a course right now called Today's Careers is a class just for Future Connect students. And so this week we've been working on polishing up resumes for jobs students might like in the future. But also my students are interviewing experts in career fields that they are interested in. And so tomorrow morning at 11 a.m., two of the students in my class will be meeting with a veterinary technician at my vet clinic up on Fremont Street in Northeast Portland. And so the networking becomes a huge piece of not only today's careers, the course I teach, but Future Connect in general. And the college coaching piece that we saw, that you saw on the graphic up there, it's really a relationship is what it is. And at PCC, there are a lot of transactions that happen, financial aid counseling, academic advising, meet with someone at the student accounts, window to pay your bill. Future Connect is definitely more than a transaction. Lots of transactions happen in my workspace, but what really happens is a relationship. And so I met Gabby in 2012 when she had just graduated from Jefferson High School, and she was taking her first college courses, and I was going to be her coach. And many times, I can't speak for Gabby, but I'll speak for many of the students I work for and with. they feel like they might not belong in college, and I've heard those words spoken in my classrooms. One thing we work really hard to do is make sure that they feel like they belong in Future Connect, because we, through our courses and our relationship and the coaching, they become a part of PCC, and they feel like they belong there. And I can tell you, I'm sure Gabby, in her second anatomy and physiology class at this point, feels like she might be more part of PCC than she ever imagined she could be on her way toward becoming a nurse. When I, on our drive down, we were talking, Josh and Gabby and I, and Josh mentioned to Gabby that he said, "You were so quiet when I met you." And Gabby in the backseat was just kind of cool and said, "Things change." And they do. And it's a pleasure as a college success coach to watch people change, stay true to who they are and where they came from, and step into who they're going to become and have their voice heard, even down at the state capitol. And so, yeah, it's a pleasure to be here to speak with all of you all today, this morning, and to be here with a student I've known for 2.5 years and who at some point in the future will be a nurse in my own community and caring for the people in my community. So, thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Good morning, Chair Reed and community members. Thank you for giving me the time to speak on behalf of Future Connect. My name is Gabina Gonzalez Gomez. I'm pleased to have some of my fellow PCC students here with me today.
Thanks for being here.
Yeah. I graduated from Jefferson High School. My years in high school were very rocky. I'm not so proud of the GPA I ended up the year with, but I was glad I made it. After graduating and receiving my diploma, I didn't know what to do next. I didn't have a plan of where to go to next. I initially thought about just working to help out my family, but then I met Future Connect and everything changed. With their help, I came up with a plan of what I wanted to do next and, most importantly, who I wanted to be. The transition from high school to college was easy to me. The classes were hard, but knowing that I had people there to help me out with something I didn't understand made the classes seem easy. My coach has helped me throughout the years in picking out what classes would be suited for me. And in the end, it turned out I was very successful in those classes. It was through the help of my coach I've decided to head towards the nursing field. Up until now, I have taken classes that led up to one of my favorite subjects, anatomy and physiology. What I'm trying to do now is apply for the nursing program here at PCC. I have started my prerequisites and took a CNA class and gained my CNA certificate, which I hope will give me a higher chance of getting into the program. With that and my 3.6 GPA, I know I'm on a good route. I will also start working during the summer to gain much more experience to add to my application. I know the classes are going to get harder, and getting into the PCC nursing program is very competitive, but I know with the help of Future Connect, I will push myself like I always have and finish out stronger than ever and make them proud. Future Connect has been a support system for me. Whenever I needed help in a class or just needed to talk, I know I could come to them for some reinforcement. Future Connect has opened a door I didn't even know was there. They gave me such a wonderful opportunity, and I ran with it. I know anyone can gain so much also from this program. These are the kind of people anyone would enjoy having around. The love and support they give make them seem like a second family, and family always look out for each other. Thank you, Future Connect, for helping me get where I'm destined to be.
Thank you, Gabby.
Thank you.
You might not be proud of your high school GPA, but I think you can be proud of 3.6. It's a great start.
It's great.
Good. Other questions? Representative Gagos.
Mr. Sherwood, yeah, you know, you said something about students in these programs sometimes not believing that they belong in college. And I just, you know, made me think about another part of your job, I'm sure, is a lot of faculty who don't believe they should be in college as well. And so can you speak to that a bit? I mean, I can imagine that the community college faculty are a bit more sensitive. I mean, otherwise, I mean, I know that's a drive for a lot of community college professors, but and maybe it's different than the university system, but I imagine that's another part of your job.
Yeah, Representative Gallegos, thanks for the question. I think there's two ways that we approach that at Future Connect. One is in our college success course, it's called College Survival and Success, and almost all of our students take it in their first term at PCC. We let students know all the different sorts of instructors they might bump into and how to communicate effectively with those instructors. In my fall term CG100 class, I pulled up emails that I had sent to instructors at campus as an example of how you can communicate effectively through email. We also talk about, you know, in the College Survival Success course.
I'm not sneaking out very quickly. Sorry.
You're not a burglar.
We talk about, sometimes I even have to talk about something as simple as how do you come in and out of a room?
We'll fill her in later. That's very good. Yeah. Thank you.
How do you walk into a college classroom?
Because
it looks differently than walking into a classroom sometimes at the high school level. And then the other piece, which I think our entire team of coaches and of course, our manager, Josh, is we build relationships with instructors on campus. We're there all the time, and we see them as allies. And just last week, I emailed a math instructor who I've gotten to know little by little over the last 2.5 years and asked if a Future Connect student could come speak for the first 5 minutes of his class to talk about something that ASPCC, the Associated Students of PCC, were doing. And the instructor said yes. And so I think it's educating our students and then building the relationships ourselves on campus. Okay. Thank you for the question.
Representative Wisnett.
I'm not getting paid for this. Thank you, Mr. Chair. But I've been telling everyone this weekend, my wife and I went to see the movie McFarlane USA. And if anyone hasn't seen that, to see how young people can achieve things. And the Hispanic culture of family devotion and hard work. It's a real culture awareness that I would recommend everyone see. And I don't get any credit. Financial benefit from that, Mr. Chair.
Very good. Thank you for the recommendation. We'll add it to our movie reviews.
You said let him name this.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Very good. Representative Hayden.
Chair Reed, thank you. I had one question on the program that's provided by the cities for the funding of the community colleges. You said it's targeted for first-generation college students, but also low income. What are the criteria? How do you look at that?
And feel free to come back up if, Mr. Sherwood, if you want some help, you can
engage
the lifeline.
Representative Hayden, we have a scholarship application that starts December 1st, and we take students' financial aid information based on the Pell eligibility. Mm-hmm. So any EFC that's below 6,000 typically, we would consider low income, mixed with and or the student's parents' completion of a four-year degree. So if they have completed a degree, then they wouldn't be eligible for the first-generation status. And if their income was above that Pell eligibility, then they wouldn't be eligible for the program. And then each city has specific parameters around who in their region is eligible.
Follow up?
Yes, please.
So how do you reach out to the student if they don't apply for the Pell? How does that process work? How do you reach out to them to identify these students that might not on their own realize that the program's out there?
Representative Hayden, one of the great things about the program is that we're serving so many more students than who are actually in the program out in the high schools. So, for instance, right now we have about 550 applicants who have applied, and what we're doing with those applicants are sending emails to see, one, if they've had, we can see from the PCC end if their financial aid has come in. And so they may have applied for a scholarship and thought they applied for financial aid, but they didn't. So then we push an email to all those who haven't, letting them know, hey, it's almost March and we don't have a financial aid here, a financial aid application. Have you completed this? Two, we work with students who otherwise their essays might be low, or maybe there's something missing on their application for us, or we see that their admissions isn't in at PCC. Then we also send emails to them. Some of those students may or may not get in the program, but all of the students who applied are getting residual information about college access.
Great program.
Thanks.
Thank you. Questions? Thank you very much.
I just want to thank Avina. Thank you very much. You were great. Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
And thank you, other students, too, for coming.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Gallegos. That completes the list of folks to testify in our informational hearing in advance of House Bill 3063. Is there anyone else who'd like to testify today?
I don't see any. So we're going to close the informational hearing on the Future Connect program and remind you again that House Bill 3063 is scheduled for Monday, March 2nd. So I don't expect all of you will be able to be back for that, but you've given us a good preparation for that, and hopefully we'll have a good hearing on that day as well. Is there anything else to come before the committee today? Anything, Victoria? We're all set?
Okay.
So Friday morning, we'll be talking about the Oregon Talent Council proposal. We'll see you here at 8 o'clock. Thank you very much. We're adjourned. Adjourned.